This is MMA Torch editor Jamie Penick, and this is the Torch audio update for Saturday, November 8th, 2008. I'm joined today by Torch columnist Jason Bent for a look back at this past week's WEC 36 event, as well as the Ultimate Fighter and some thoughts going in. We are a week away from Lesnar Couture UFC 91. So, Jason, we'll just get right into WEC 36 featuring the shocking upset of the California kid, Uriah Faber, and the one of the worst fights I've ever seen in my life. Your overall thoughts on the show and what WEC can do going forward following that debacle?
Overall, and I was going into this card excited for both of the, you know, the main event and the co-main event, completely floored by it. The biggest shock to me was the Pulver loss. I was really excited to see Jens fight once again. I was completely shocked to see him get throttled the way he did. That actually shocked me more than Faber's defeat, just because I've always pulled so hard for Pulver. I did not expect Mike Brown to provide much of a challenge to Faber, so that my jaw was on the floor. I mean, obviously WEC has hitched their cart to Faber. The California kid's face has been everywhere. He is the face of the promotion, you know, which is, you know, running just for the lighter weight fighters. And this could be a disaster for them if they don't move forward in the proper manner, especially given the fact that the Filo Sonnen fight was just horrible. Horrible. I mean, when the fighters are not even interviewed after the bout, and it was kind of like it wasn't even mentioned. It was like, you didn't see this, it didn't happen, let's forget about it and move forward. And then you move forward to watching Faber get beaten, you know, handily, and this was just not the way anybody would have wanted the card to take place. And this looked, you know, it looks like how Elite XC failed, because everything that could have went wrong actually did go wrong for them. And if this were a lesser promotion or another company, I would say this would signal the end of things, but obviously they're Zuffa owned and operated. That's not going to happen. And I do believe they have enough fighters in place everywhere else to move forward, because, you know, just like the UFC is about the company and not the fighters, I think WEC is going to have to go forward in the same manner. And it's going to be very interesting to me to see where they go with Faber, how they match him up, and how, in fact, Faber can bounce back. But this definitely was a disastrous show for everyone involved, to say the least.
Well, and there was the interview with Faber this past week talking about how Zuffa and Dana White and the Fertitta brothers had come to him and were talking to him about the possibilities of going into pay-per-view with WEC in 2009. This puts a hitch into those plans, because that ain't going to happen anytime soon with their number one face in Uriah Faber getting beat like he did here. Granted, we don't have to worry about seeing middleweight action like that on WEC cards going in the future because of the folding of that division, as well as the light heavyweights. But with the rest of the show here, we got the opening. We had four middleweights making their debuts for WEC on this show, which I found laughable when they're only in the promotion for another month and a half. But Jake Roschalt taking on Nissen Osterneck here. Roschalt, of course, we know has the wrestling background, and we were all coming into this looking to see if he could do anything more with it. And the answer to that question is, oh, no, he can't. Osternick handled him very well in the stand-up. Roschalt's got a hell of a chin, took a ton of punishment throughout both rounds that this fight went. But once he got it to the ground, Osternick just was in nowhere in the league of the three-time NCAA champion. So, you know, I wasn't impressed by either fighter, really. Roschalt got to display his wrestling skill against someone who was not near his level, so he looked more dominant than he may have been against some others, but he's got absolutely no stand-up game at all right now. And, you know, he, against a more skilled striker, he's not going to last into that second round like he did, but What were your thoughts on this opening bout?
I was very excited to get the chance to see Rochalt. I mean, he's a highly decorated NCAA wrestler, but he really appeared to be so much more dominant than he really is in this bout. He was exposed for being not as good as anybody thought he could have been at this point. This was a fight that should have been best left in a gym somewhere. I think this really shows more that he's not ready for prime time, and just the way he looked like such a one-dimensional fighter, I don't think he's going to be ready for the big show for any time very soon unless he gets much more developed at very, very fast pace. His wrestling is fantastic, but other than that, he's got nothing else. And against a better opponent, I think he would be defeated, you know, with ease. This was the right opponent for him at this point, and it still did not serve as a showcase for him that it really should have. So at this point, he's not as good as advertised, and there were not enough things that you saw in Rochalt that make you believe that he could be there in a few months. I think the jury's still out on him. He's got the wrestling skills, but you've got to be multidimensional to succeed in this game today. And he's got to get in the gym, and he's got to train and get better, and he's got to do it, you know, without being under the big lights and in front of a large audience. In the future, I'd like to see him again, but not until he gets his game more developed. Osterneck was nothing remarkable, and like I said, if this were a better opponent, I think Rochalt would have suffered his defeat in a very quick fashion. It was just a bad fight because I expected to see so much more out of Jake than we did. He is simply just a collegiate wrestler at this point.
Yeah, definitely agreed on that point. And that brings us to the fight that you were most shocked by here, Jens Pulver and Leonard Garcia. I'd say the most impressive thing coming out of this show was Leonard Garcia. The fact that Jens Pulver went 5 rounds with Uriah Faber, and then Leonard Garcia stops him in 1:12 with those heavy as all hell hands. That was for 145 pounds. That man's got just freaking bricks for fists, and threw a couple of nasty, nasty shots at the end of this when with Pulver up against the cage. For such a small guy in terms of weight, the fact that he had that power in those punches was one of the most impressive things I've seen in a while. And if that's any indication of what he's got ahead of him, Leonard Garcia is going to be a big deal at 145 pounds.
I agree. Leonard Garcia, he punches like Robbie Lawler. And you forget how small this guy is. Pulver is not done yet. He's not finished yet. And Garcia handled him with ease, and it was just landing these thunderous shots. That Leonard Garcia comes away from the show becoming a star, and it's how they promote him in the future that's going to determine what is next. But there are fights on the horizon for him, and there are plenty of fights for Pulver. But this was a shock to me because, you know, Pulver has never been throttled like this. I mean, 1:12, and, you know, Pulver's got a chin and survived 5 full minutes with Faber where he wasn't winning the fight, but he was never really hurt so much as to where he was going to be finished off. And here Garcia took care of him with ease. And like I said, he punches like a middleweight or even bigger for being 145 pounds. This was Garcia's coming out party, and by beating an opponent such as Jens Pulver, this does nothing but propel him to the top of that division in short order. This was a great fight for him, a complete shock for me to see, but I do look forward to seeing Garcia in the future because, like I said, it looks like he hits off Robbie Lawler. Very exciting fighter.
And we got another couple of middleweights making their debuts up next, and this was one of those blink-and-you'll-miss-it fights. David Avalon against Aaron Simpson, and Simpson picks up a nasty highlight reel-style knockout 18 seconds into this round. Just absolutely connected full force, put his entire body weight into that swing, and landed it flush on Avalon's chin. That was very much reminiscent of Junior Dos Santos with his uppercut against Verdum just a couple weeks ago. And that was definitely a good showing for Simpson. to try to get himself out with the UFC and then endear himself to the Zuffa management. But other than that, there wasn't much to it. And until we see if he can get tested by anyone else, if he's got anything left else in his game outside of that really powerful right hand, not sure what else to make of it.
I mean, there really is not much more you can take from this fight. I mean, 18 seconds and it was done. This is going to serve as his audition tape of sorts, and this highlight will be definitely shown before his next fight, wherever that may be, which I would imagine he would probably get a shot somewhere on the undercard of a UFC fight. But there's not much you can take from this other than the fact that he landed the right punch at the right time to the right point and just shut the lights off. You know, this was his audition tape, and blink and you'll miss it, but definitely a nasty, nasty knockout. And this is something he's going to be proud of for a while, because this is the highlight reel knockout. This is the ultimate knockout, you know, whatever edition they're up to. This is the kind of, you know, knockout that gets put on a collection like that. So he goes from this. Where he goes next, I have no idea at all, but he's at least got a pretty nice little audition tape to take with him wherever he may turn up. And he'll at least be given another shot to see if he can capture lightning once again.
And that brings us to what was supposed to be a middleweight title bout between the WEC middleweight champion Paulo Filho and the challenger Chael Sonnen. And, you know, despite Filho coming in overweight for this fight, the pre-fight interviews made it seem like both guys still had something to fight for here. Sonnen had a lot of emotion in his video, saying that he swore to his father on his deathbed that he'd win the world title. Good thing for him, WEC isn't really the world title there, and he doesn't have to worry about that. But it just seemed like with that, they'd come out with something to fight for, and this is just one of the worst fights I've ever seen. Filho was content to just lay on his back and kind of bat his legs at Sonnen as Sonnen just stood over atop of him and let him lay there, occasionally throwing a shot or two. The second round, he had him get up, but he did that about 15 to 20 times. And then you get the third round where Filho is looking around staring at God knows what, and Sonnen's not even hitting him. He's tagging him, tapping him lightly. He's not, it's like a bad sparring session in this third round. And I just, there's something seriously wrong with Paulo Filho right now. And Chael Sonnen, for whatever reason, did nothing to really finish the fight. And plain and simple, Filho is apparently going to be sending his belt to Sonnen. Sonnen doesn't deserve that belt. Filho doesn't deserve that belt. He should have been stripped of it before this fight even started for missing weight in a title defense. And it's just inexcusable, awful fight, terrible showing for both of the fighters, terrible showing for WEC. Just plain and simple, there was nothing good that came out of this train wreck of 20 minutes.
I mean, if ever there was a reason to get rid of a middleweight division, this would be the fight that would say, okay, let's can this one and fire everybody, because this is the worst fight I have seen in recent history that I can even recall, especially when you take into account that Filho, you know, is considered, you know, one of the top middleweights, if not the number two middleweight in the world, you know, in most people's opinions. But at this point, he does not belong in a ring or a cage at all. You know, until he takes care of the issues which are clearly plaguing him. I noted this going in, the way he was just so overweight. I'd hoped not for the worst, but, you know, saw so much worse than that. This is a guy that was just disinterested, out of sorts, and just out of his head, and did not belong in there at all. And then you look at Sonnen and the fact that, you know, he wanted this fight so bad, and he wanted the belt, and he was so disrespected by Filho coming in overweight, and he did nothing to take the belt. These were two guys fighting over something that neither seemed to want, which, you know, at this point, the middleweight belt, it belongs in the garbage. It doesn't deserve to be mailed to anybody because it's not worth the postage. it's not worth the cost to ship the damn thing. It should be just put away and forgotten, and the division should be left vacated, you know, for permanent record, because this was an awful fight, especially this high on a card anywhere. This fight was so bad that Caleb Starnes right now is laughing because his performance against Nathan Quarry now, you know, seems like Griffin Bonner compared to this one, because this was trash. At least Caleb Starnes ran around the ring and got a workout in. Filio laid on his back and, you know, he could have at least done a bicycle with his legs and worked up a little bit of a sweat, but he just proceeded to lay there and do nothing. And Sonnen seemed to, you know, do even less in my regards, because you want this fight, you want to serve notice to anybody, you know, take it. But to a point, I do believe maybe he was respecting the fact that Filio was definitely out of his head, and he just wanted to get out of this fight as soon as possible, in the same fashion that I wanted the fight to end as soon as possible so I wouldn't have to watch any more of it. Horrible fight, and where Filio goes from here, I don't know, but I'm imagining it might be celebrity rehab with Dr. Drew. He could probably take Rico Rodriguez's seat, because this guy is definitely fighting some demons that want a lot more than middleweight belt. He was out of his mind, out of sorts, and he needs to address these things before he steps back into any ring anywhere on the planet.
Thank God there weren't two more rounds to that fight. To make matters worse, the face of the promotion, the California kid, the featherweight phenom, Uriah Faber, loses his featherweight championship to Mike Brown in the first round. I don't know if he thought he was an ROH wrestler here, jumping off the cage and bouncing backwards with an elbow, and just trying to do too much here and trying to be too unorthodox with his offense, but he tried to throw a blind elbow and just got caught. Just got caught. You wrote it in your write-up of this. If they fight 10 times, Uriah Faber wins this fight 10 times. And all you need to do for proof of that is look at the fact that Mike Brown is out indefinitely with torn cartilage in his rib cage from a knee from Uriah Faber. Plain and simple, if this fight went on even to the next round, Mike Brown wasn't going to last. If Uriah Faber could have survived the first round, it might not have gone to a second. And he just got caught. Brown took his opportunity. He seized it. He got right on top of him, started throwing punches. Faber could not cover up, could not advance his position, couldn't do anything to stop the punches coming in. Brown did a good job of getting under Faber's body with the punches and actually landing some good quality shots there, forcing the ref to step in and stop the fight. And you got to give Brown all the credit in the world for taking advantage of the opportunity when it presented itself, for connecting on the shot when Faber was not looking and trying to throw a blind elbow. And he's the new WEC featherweight champion. And, you know, as he said in his post-fight interview, not a whole lot of people knew who he was. Not a whole lot of people have seen much of his stuff. They didn't know what to expect from him. But he hits fucking hard, plain and simple.
Yeah, to me, Uriah Faber reminded me of Roy Jones Jr. as far as the one fight, and I forget who his opponent was, when Roy put his hands behind his back before delivering the shot. I think Faber has been so good for so long that he really believed he could get away with absolutely anything he tried in the cage. And again, against most opponents, he probably could. He is that good. You know, his previous fight with Pulver, you know, went to the decision, but Pulver was never really in that fight. The only thing in that fight was Pulver's heart. Faber completely dominated that fight. And, like, you know, against Mike Brown, if they fought 10 more times, he would win all 10 of those. Faber is that good, and I think he just got reckless. He absolutely got reckless, and Mike Brown took advantage of that opportunity, because had the fight continued, had Faber been able to survive that moment, that onslaught, you know, it was possibility that Mike Brown may have been forced to quit on his stool due to injuries. I think that could have been a possibility, but Brown took advantage of it, went for it, and wanted it, and he did everything that Sonnen failed to do in the previous bout, and that was go for the kill, go for it, take it. and he did take it. For that, I give him all the respect in the world and a ton of credit. But Mike Brown's not going to be champ for long. He's not going to be champ for long because you put Leonard Garcia in there against him. Garcia's going to hurt him and probably take him out with ease. And like you put a Faber in there for a rematch down the line, and Faber's going to win that bout. I think Mike Brown made the most of what he had. And on this night, he came out victorious, which shocked the world. But I don't think he's going to be a player for the time. I think this was his one moment. He did the best he could with the best he had, and he caught Uriah Faber, who was reckless, who went into this fight, you know, figuring he could beat anybody, and most people figured he could. He threw an elbow that was just ill-advised, to say the least. Brown capitalized on it and took advantage of raining the shots down and got the victory, but this was more or less Faber throwing the elbow and caught based for his mistake than it was Brown executing a superior game plan or being a dominant fighter. This was an upset of all upsets because this was not going to happen twice. It won't happen again. It did happen, and this was a complete shock.
And we move from that show to another Zuffa-branded television event on the same night with The Ultimate Fighter. And I don't even want to get into the particulars of what happened in the house because, you know, you said enough in your review of the show this week. It doesn't need to be revisited. Suffice to say, the ratings came in today, and that's not what people are watching. People tune in for the fights. The show, as the hour goes on, gradually gains more viewers and then pops up once the fight happens at the end of the show. So, especially in this eighth season of it, less and less people are watching the actual house antics. But that was one of the most disgusting things I've seen outside of Fear Factor in a long time on television. But as for the fight itself, you know, Philippe Nover, he impressed with the fight that he had to get into the house. And he did even more than that here in his fight against Dave Kaplan. And I think it's highly possible that he is the one that we've been hearing about, that Dana's talked about being the next Anderson Silva. And just the fluidity of his movements here, getting Kaplan down and pounding on him and then moving quickly to the back and getting that rear naked choke for the victory. It was a highly impressive performance from Philippe Nover. And, I mean, the kid's got nothing but good things ahead of him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he went from fainting Philippe Nover to fluid Philippe Nover because the guy is just silky smooth, dispatched of Dave Kaplan with just complete ease, and Kaplan's not a slouch. I mean, if Frank Mir suggests that Kaplan is the best, you know, 155er in the house, I may not go for that, but I will at least give Mir the respect of knowing what he's watching and that Kaplan is a pretty good fighter, but Nover is apparently on another level. Nover could possibly be the winner of this season and come out of this as a star for the future. I haven't seen anything else to suggest otherwise at this point. As far as the ratings go for the hijinks in the house and the fights, one of the biggest complaints I have is that this fight didn't come on until there were about 6 minutes left in the broadcast, which immediately lets everyone know the fight's lasting maybe a minute or two. I think they would be best served to try and have the fight happen maybe just a little bit earlier into the second half hour, just to raise enough doubts as to whether this one may go a couple of rounds or maybe even three with the final victory. And I think you could follow that up with showing the behind the scenes after the fight on the current episode, rather than spending the first five or six of next week revisiting the post-fight actions. I think that would do more to keep people watching for that second half of the hour, and it would allow you to at least wonder if you're going to be treated for a fight, rather than looking at the clock and saying, yeah, this one's not going to last too long. Other than that, Nover is completely awesome. He's just so smooth in there. I've seen nothing but good from him in his two fights that I really, other than Junie Browning, I'm very high on Browning from his fights he's had previously and just what I know about him, but I've got to have Nover at the top and Browning a very close second, and I really, really do hope we get treated to a Browning-Nover fight. because I think that's going to be something to watch. And I do believe that one is going to determine who wins, because I think it is between those two guys. As for the stuff in the house, anybody that wished for more drama or more stuff to happen in the house, they've gotten their wish this year, because we've seen nothing but stuff in the house, and my jaw is still on the ground. I cannot believe what we have seen, and I'm just curious to see what the ratings will be for, you know, next week, if in fact people were ultimately turned off by what they have seen, because this is quite a possibility that we have seen way too much on this episode. They come for the fights, and a lot of people do stay for the extracurricular stuff, but in this respect, the extracurricular stuff could be enough to turn people off, and maybe they won't turn their sets on till about 10:45, just to catch the final quarter hour and the fight, because they're very routine in how they air these fights. I think they should move the fights up, maybe show the post-fight stuff right afterwards, and they're going to have to cut back on the other stuff, because I'm afraid they're going to be turning off a large portion of their audience.
Agreed. And I'm honestly hoping for a Browning-Nover finale that they should hopefully not be matched up in the semis, and if both of them pick off their opponents and face each other in the finale, I think, especially with that being on the line, could turn it up for that fight to be even better than it would have been in the semis.
I agree.
Being live on Spike TV and being in front of the crowd for that fight for those two fighters, Junie especially, I have a feeling that he's going to be the type of fighter that thrives more with a crowd around him, as opposed to the situation with just the fighters there. So, I mean, only time will tell, and we'll see what happens with them, but definitely some really good fighters on this season, which is good to see, and some people that look like they could make an impact in their divisions should they not win the Ultimate Fighter here. And got to talk about it. We are a week out from UFC 91, Lesnar and Couture. We're going to have a ton of stuff going this week covering this card and this fight in particular. Jason, we got a poll up on the site right now about predictions for the Lesnar-Couture fight, and there are options for a Lesnar win by judge's decision, tap out early, tap out late, knockout early, knockout late, Couture win by judge's decision, tap out early, tap out late, knockout early, knockout late, or is this fight too difficult to make prediction? So far, Couture has edged it with 142 votes in. He's edging it slightly, but it's very interesting to see because no one's giving Lesnar credit for any type of tap out, which makes sense, but he's getting more credit for the knockout early or late. Couture is getting credit for the tap out early or late, and it's very paralleled on that, with one guy kind of having the advantage in one way or the other, and a solid 18% saying it's too difficult to make a prediction. Where are you standing on this a week out from this fight? What are you thinking is going to happen in this?
Well, it's quite conceivable that Couture could force the early tap, given Lesnar's experience and taking into account Randy's wealth of experience. As far as Lesnar making Couture tap, I do not think that is an option, because I do not believe that is the way he fights. And also beyond that, I don't think Couture is the type to tap in this fight. I think he's going to be, you know, going out on his shield. That'll be the way this one would end. I think Lesnar would ground and pound him out, and the referee will have to call this one, or I believe it's going to go to the decision. I do not see this fight ending early at all. I think we're in for at least three rounds of a very, very good fight. Right now I'm leaning toward Lesnar, stopping it in the third round. Couture could conceivably end things early in the first, but that depends on whether or not he catches Brock. I don't see Brock ever catching Randy, but I do envision Brock on top of him and just pounding him beyond belief. I think that's more likely, although we could be in line for a five-round fight going to the decision. I think Couture is definitely somebody who can hang in there. You know, regardless of the size difference, I think his experience and his ability stand alone. This is going to be a very, very good fight. I think it could actually be better than advertised. I think Randy has a lot to prove. He still has a lot to prove, even though he really shouldn't have anything to prove. He does. Brock has a world of things he has to prove in this fight, and everyone is going to be the victor because we are going to be treated to an excellent fight, and it's going to be at least, I believe, 2.5 rounds of just some physical, brutal fighting going on. But at this very moment, I've got Lesnar running away with this one in the middle of the third, although that could change. I still keep going back to Randy because you just can't count Captain America out, and I think that is one of the biggest, most intriguing selling points of this fight is Randy's heart and the fact of the matter that every time Randy has been counted out, he's come through and won and looked like a 25-year-old fighter. So we're in for a treat with this one.
Yeah, right now I don't have any set in stone prediction for this fight. It's coming down to a few factors for me. I honestly don't think that Brock Lesnar is going to tap in this fight. I think after getting caught by Frank Mir, after dominating him like he did in that first fight in the UFC, I think he really has worked on not allowing himself to get caught. I think that's probably one of the biggest things that he's had to work on in his attempts and concentrate on is not allowing himself to get into a position to get caught like that. He learned another lesson in his fight with Heath Herring in the fact that, you know, he was able to sit on top of him and pound on some punishment with knees and a little bit of ground and pound, but he was in no hurry to finish that fight. He's going to have a much harder time keeping Randy Couture down, especially for 5 rounds. It's not going to happen. If he has learned his lessons from his first two fights, I'm with you that Brock Lesnar could win this fight with a ground and pound stoppage, probably third round or later, because it will take that long to wear down Randy Couture. But if this thing gets to if this thing goes 5 rounds to a judge's decision, that's a crapshoot because that'll mean that these guys were in an absolute war and in an all-out fight, because I don't see either of them without a stoppage dominating the fight for the full 5 rounds. I have a feeling it's going to come down to one round being a deciding round. And, you know, that's another thing that makes this fight so intriguing, because Brock Lesnar is, despite the fact that he's not the most qualified to be in the heavyweight spot, title spot right now, he doesn't have the record, he doesn't have the experience, blah, 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 all the arguments why he shouldn't be there. He's there because it's going to make them a ton of money. He's fine with that. He's comfortable with that. He understands that. And he's taken this fight anyway, despite his inexperience, because he's just that talented. And if anyone with 3 MMA fights under their belt is going to win a title, it would be Brock Lesnar. There isn't anyone else out in the game right now that has the kind of physical talent and just absolute aptitude for this sport at this early stage that Brock Lesnar does. And that's why I think you're right. I think this fight, I'm with you that this could be better than advertised. And I sincerely hope for everyone's sake that this doesn't turn out to be a disappointment of a fight, because that would just harm UFC. It would harm MMA in general. And I don't think it will be that way at all, but I also don't want to get it too overhyped in my head as well coming into this to be disappointed, but I really don't think that there's any chance of that happening.
No, and as far as Brock with his, you know, lack of experience MMA-wise, had UFC existed in the form that it is today, he never would have went to World Wrestling Entertainment, and he probably would be in his 10th year of fighting MMA professionally. I look at Lesnar with a lack of experience, kind of like a LeBron James, and the fact that LeBron James was built to play basketball at the highest level possible and dominate, and he did as soon as he came into the league. Brock Lesnar is the same way. He's just a freak of nature, and, you know, he got caught. He got caught against Frank Mir, and I think it served to embarrass him. And the competitor that he is, it has served to motivate him, and he probably has not slept without imagining that moment when he tapped out ever since it happened. So he has been working on that tirelessly ever since. At a certain point, it is a business. And as far as anybody complaining that maybe he doesn't deserve to be there, you know, a lot of the top-selling musicians have never deserved to be where they are. I mean, Gene Simmons of Kiss cannot read or write sheet music, and he's a multi-millionaire, you know, selling merchandise, CDs, and everything. So it isn't always about who is the most proficient at a craft, but as far as being in the right place at the right time and being ultra-marketable. In Brock, I think he's supremely marketable, but beyond that, he is the real deal. He may not have the biggest and longest resume in the world, but if you put him to work, he's going to show you why you should have hired him in the first place. And I think he will not prove to disappoint anyone, and he is the only fighter on the planet who could go into such a fight with such little experience and be considered a favorite because he has all the tools to succeed. Conceivably, he is in the prime of his athletic career. The only way to go is up. And after he dominated Heath Herring in such a fashion, how far that up is for Brock Lesnar could be a lot higher than the upside for any other fighter ever in the heavyweight division of MMA. I think the guy could be that good. And when all is said and done with, I think he could go down as one of the best heavyweights of all time. I really think he has all the tools. And, you know, going against Randy Couture, this definitely could be the passing of the torch. And we're in for one hell of a fight. Lesnar's prepared for the crowd. He's fought before them, not necessarily fought before them for WWE, but he has performed in front of large crowds. The crowds and hype are not going to bother him. So I think he's going to be able to go into this fight calm, cool, and collected. And we're not going to see any nervousness or any tentative manner from either one of these fighters. And we're going to be in for a treat. Couture is not going to be a fighter that is going to crumple to the ground and take it a la Heath Herring. He definitely will go out on his shield, which that's what you want. You want both men to come in and give no quarter and accept none in return, and we're all going to come out of this one the winner because the dearth of fights ahead as far as even looking way beyond to, you know, a Lesnar-Fedor fight or a Randy-Fedor fight could become a reality within the next year. This fight could serve to set the table for such, you know, huge mega events, but we're in for a Super Bowl of epic proportions with this one.
And you talked about Brock potentially being probably one of the best heavyweights that this sport will ever see. If he sticks with it, the thing that will be most impressive is regardless of whatever his record is or will be, it will be against the top tier competition from fight number two. Fight number two on in his career will have been against the top guys in his division, in his sport, because of his marketability and getting in there and getting thrown into the deep end of the pool right off the bat. And I think regardless of what he does with it, it's going to be an impressive thing to see and look back on 5 years from now when he's got more fights under his belt, see where he's at and see who he's had to go through to get there. Regardless of whether Lesnar wins or loses this fight against Randy Couture, he's in this sport for the long haul, hopefully. Hopefully he doesn't decide to change his mind and go off and, I don't know, try to be a professional soccer player next or something. But, you know, hopefully he's in this for the long haul because, like you said, he could very well become one of the best heavyweights to ever grace this sport. And, I'm glad that we're here to be able to give our comments on it at the early stages of this career of his. And as Randy Couture's career is waning down to the end of the later years, it's exciting to see Captain America continue to perform like he did last year and like he's hoping to against Lesnar here. So, I mean, we're only a week away now, Jason. We are only a week away. So thank you again for joining me on the Torch Audio Update. Everyone, be sure to go and check Jason Bent's articles on the main site. He's got two more that were posted up today covering WEC and The Ultimate Fighter from this week. We'll have plenty more coverage of UFC 91 as the week goes on, including my countdown to UFC 91 article series starting Monday, with a look at Randy Couture and his fight career. So Stick around with us on MMATorch.com. Big things going on this week. UFC 91 a week away. Thank you for listening again. And Jason, thank you for joining me once again.
It's been my pleasure. Well, I guess this is growing.